Okay, my name is Ted M., and I am an alcoholic. Thank you for having me out here. It's a pleasure to be here. You guys, it's beautiful out here. My drinking started early. My drinking started when I was about 13. Well, it really started when I was like 5 or 6. My dad would give me a sip out of his beer here or there. But when I turned 13, I was hanging out with kids that were older than me, and I got introduced to hard liquor. And that's where the shit show began. Excuse my language. I don't know what the policies are here with language. First time I got drunk, I pissed and shit myself, threw up. They had to walk me to the door and ring the doorbell and run away. That's what we did back in the day. One fell out. They dropped me off and they ran for their lives because they thought they were going to get in trouble. I woke up with a hangover, but I had such a good experience that night because I realized that I didn't fit in anywhere. And sure as damned, I did it again for many years. And I never felt like I fit in. It wasn't until I found alcohol that I actually felt that I fit in. I stuck out like a sore thumb in school. I had no confidence. I had this shitty self-esteem. I didn't love myself, which is huge for me now in my sobriety. I was always searching for acceptance. And alcohol brought me that acceptance. It gave me those tools to feel like I fit in. It gave me that confidence to go up and make an ass out of myself and be accepted. And it brought me to having absolutely nothing, literally. Brought me to homelessness. I just came out here, I want to say, been out here maybe 2.5 months. I'm from Boston, Massachusetts. Irish. As Irish, we like to drink, believe me. If you can't tell, all I have to do is smile. I qualify. I try not to spend too much time on what I did, but I did a lot of drinking, which turned into a lot of cocaine, a lot of crack, and by the grace of God, I don't have to do that anymore. But I can say only through the book was I able to discover who I really was. Only through this book was I able to finally love myself. Because I tried this program without this book, without a sponsor, for a long time, and I got absolutely nowhere, repetitively. And I'm so glad to have finally found this literature. Because I used to be the person that would sit in the back, and I'd do the meetings that were, you know, court mandatory, whatever it may be. And then I would get off whatever case or whatever charge they were throwing at me. And then I would repeat and repeat and repeat. And it wasn't until I hit complete desperation. And being homeless in the winter in Boston is not a good deal. We don't pitch tents out there. It's cold out there. So I'm going to tell you how I ended up in California. I'm a media composer. I compose music for film and television. And my sponsor is a fellow media composer. We met online. And he must have known I was really, really on a sick one. Because he reached out to me and he said, "Do you need help?" And I said, "Oh my gosh." You know what I mean? All paranoid, tweaking out like, "What does he know? Oh shit." And I was scared at first to say yes. And I said, yeah, I need help. I'm an alcoholic, I'm a drug addict, and I'm about to be homeless. And he said, go out and get a big book. And it probably took me about a month and a half. It took me a stay at a psych ward before I grabbed the big book. I was so I was sober, but I had to check myself into a psych ward because I didn't know how to think, and I did not know how to live without drugs and alcohol. And I finally got the big book, and he was surprised. He was shocked. He didn't even believe it. I called him after about a month and a half of talking to him and giving him every excuse in the book why I couldn't get a big book. You know, I don't have $9.50. You know, they just went on and on and on. But when I got out of that psych ward that day, I actually had completely surrendered. And that's really what it took me. I had to completely surrender to this disease. I had to hand the keys over to somebody else. And I had to believe in a power greater than myself. And trust another alcoholic. And trusting another alcoholic is not easy for me. I'm stubborn as hell. I'm Irish. I'm arrogant. I'm rude. I like to be the center of attention. I like to get into fights. I like to stir up the pot, you know. So we started big booking. And I started getting into the work. You know, I started to try to take inventory on myself. I tried to find out where this all started. And for me, it wasn't the alcohol was just it's just an excuse for me to escape myself and feelings that I had from when I was a kid. And you know, I love my sponsor. He might not pick up the phone for me all the time, that mother beep beep beep, but I know if I shot him a text and said I need you to pick up the phone, he would pick up the phone for me. And I know he believes in me and he believes in my recovery. And I didn't have many people that believed in me. So when I found somebody that believed in me and believed in my recovery, I started to believe in myself. And, you know, I just want to be able to shed a little bit of hope for somebody out there who's still suffering. If you're still suffering, hand the keys over. Give it away, man. You know, and that's what I'm doing now. I'm trying to give it away to other people. Because I wanted to kill myself. I wanted to die. I didn't want to live anymore. You know, drugs and alcohol, they destroyed me. I thought the best thing for me. When they say a life beyond your wildest dreams, I am living a life beyond my wildest dreams. I am in L.A. I got a performance coming up with the L.A. Philharmonic next week. I can't even tell you how grateful I am. Everything I have in life I owe to this program, Alcoholics Anonymous. Everything. Everything. The fact that I'm able to come out here and share such a great thing with all these great people. I like to call you all mutants like me, to be around all you mutants. And we might be mutants, but we don't have to mutate. I hope I hit the 10 minutes. I appreciate you letting me share. God bless all of you. And thank you. Thank you, AA. Sorry, I like doing that. I'm going to introduce PJA.
PJ Alcoholic. Good morning, everybody. Let's see if we can fix this. How's that? Whoa. Easy there, killer. Easy, big boy. Try this. How's that? Good?
Yeah.
All right. There's a snow globe over here. I like snow globes. Squirrel. PG alcoholic. I'm going to take this off. This is just for presentation, so now we'll just get comfortable, okay? Thank God.
Get a little coat rack over there.
So, don't worry. You don't have to stop playing the stripping. You don't have to stop playing the stripping music. It ain't going that far. Oh, you have no idea. Dun, 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 da, da, da. Just trying to get this, you know. I was about as skinny as Ted when I came in. I had a few more teeth. Not many, but a few more than he does. And now I'm just like a fat old guy. I don't know how that happened. What I like to do is... In 9-11, 2001 was a tragedy, right? And then 11-9-01 was a miracle. Because that's the day I got sober. Like Ted, I'm from Boston. And I go really slow at the beginning because I just kind of collect myself. But by the end of the talk, I'm talking like this, so you got to keep up because I really go quick. So let's just go. So I'm from Boston, the Projects, Billy, Donna, Marie, Kelly, PJ. Those are the kids. I'm the baby. I'm PJ. And we grew up ducking. Oh, shit. You know, because my mother and father, they were drinkers. And they were, my mother's flying knives. Who the fuck cooked this meal? And... You know, you're ducking and diving. So I'm always a nervous little scared kid, you know. Something's always going down. And then in the projects, blacks, whites, Puerto Ricans, that's the regular terms. But in the projects, we weren't, everybody wasn't calling everybody that. They were calling everybody else stuff. Anyways, and that's just how it was back there in the early 70s. I grew up, I was born in 65. So, let's get all the stuff out of the way. So, I'm 53. I've got 17 years sober. So, I need to know. And, so, but around 65, I was born. So, around 70, I'm 5 years old, little piss cutter, you know, but scared, nervous little kid. And just always, you know, I wasn't always jumping, looking that way. Maybe I was, I don't know, but inside my head I was, because something's always going down, you know, because they were bombing out the blacks in the projects, or the Puerto Ricans weren't getting along with the white kids, the Irish kids weren't getting along with the Italian kids, and it's just, but we all lived together on a good day. Everything was wonderful. We're all playing. Well, not me, because I suck at sports, but I tried. But, like, they're playing basketball, and there's everybody's playing together, and it's all good. And at the end, they're drinking the beers, and this and that. And it's wonderful. But deep down, there's that hatred that people were living in. And it's I've come to know that we don't even hate, really. It's just we were brought up in this weird world of we should hate or was taught to hate, kind of. And but no one really, you know, nothing happened to me that I would hate you. But the way you grew up with everybody, all this information in your head, like, oh, you're not supposed to make this person, you're not supposed to like that person. It's a bunch of bullshit. But anyways, that's the world I grew up in. So I'm always nervous something's going to happen. Because something was always happening. Around 12 years old, so there was about 6 buildings in a row, big buildings, 3 stories, and each building had four apartments on each floor. So about 12 apartments each building. So I would say there's about 60 buildings in the projects. Maybe, something like that. And I'm trying to see, just to give you, I'm theatrical. So here's the porch we grew up on. I'm going to get to that in a second. But so it's about this big porch, right? So when I was about 12 years old, I figured these kids were walking through the playground and they were all playing punch. And punch is like softball, but you punch the ball and play the same, you know. And you just run around the base and they were playing and it looked fun. And I was like, ooh, they're doing it. And that's just my memory of how I became friends with these people. And we all hung on that one porch. That was the size. And It was great. We had about 20 friends total, roughly. About 15 guys and about 5 girls. And any given day, after school or before school, someone's on the porch. Somewhere during the day, all of us happen to be there, but sometime during the day, it's 2, 3 people, 4 people, 5 people, but at any time of the day, everybody ends up being there. And it started with either a joint or Heffenreff, a private stock. And I hated beer. However, the Heffenreff, a private stock, they had the little riddles on the cap, like the game Concentration from back in the day, where you had to look at the cow and the this and the and figure out, it says, I love you, or whatever the little riddle is. I love the little riddles. I love games, and I'm a fun guy. So that's why I like the Heffenreffers. That's it. Other than that, I was like this, drinking it. However, I realized that after a few drinks, or after a couple of puffs, like, hey, how you doing? You know, all of a sudden, I'm John Travolta, feeling good, I'm fashionable, you know, the ladies' man. But that's another story, because today I'm really not the ladies' man. I kind of like guys, but that's a whole other Oprah show. So we'll get to that later down the line. But anyway, so I'm a nervous kid, and I get this marijuana, and I get this beer, and it makes me feel good. And now I'm like, well, this is cool, because now I just don't give a fuck. If you're calling me names, or you're trying to fight with me, you know, I'm the Hulk now, and I'm a scrawny little dude. You know, but it's just so wonderful that I just... When you're a nervous kid and you're worried about what people are thinking, or you're worried about what you're going to do, or you're worrying about how you're going to do it, or whatever you're worrying about, because it's constant fear, the marijuana and the drinking took that fear right away. And who cares? Whatever. I remember my guidance counselor one time. Or maybe it was a shrink. I don't know. One of those people. But they said, you know, when you get to the point, because I said, I can't stop smoking marijuana, whatever. And he's like, you know, if you ever get to the point where you say, fuck it, you should stop. Well, I went way past pocket. You know? But anyway, so it's just so relieving. Like Ted was saying, that you feel so out of place. And then all of a sudden, you got a little buzz going, and you're like, I can do this. Whatever, if I'm in a black neighborhood, a straight neighborhood, a gay neighborhood, a Puerto Rican neighborhood, a drug neighborhood, a wedding, a christening, wherever I was, give me a couple of whatever you have, and I'm like, I can do this. I belong here. Yep, that's right. I'm the best here. You know, I'm just one among many, but all of a sudden, I'm the attraction of the show. It's someone else's wedding, but I'm the star. Show me the dance floor and give me some music and don't even let's, you know, I just have a good time, you know. I love a party. And, you know, that was another saying they said, you know, you don't even go to the party. You come and you are the party. Hell yeah. So it was all going okay on the weekends, and all of a sudden, like just a Friday, and then all of a sudden it's Friday, Saturday, Sunday. Now all of a sudden it's every friggin' night, and then we got no money because I'm from the projects. So one day, what happened is, I started learning how to make money. Shoplifting downtown. Easy. Then you get back on the train with all your little hot goods, and you go to the projects, and you just go all those places and sell all your stuff, and then at the end of the night you get a lot of money. So my idea was, I go to Tello's. You know, I'm 16, 17, I'm in teenagers. I go to Tello's, which was the fashionable place to shop to get your all Jordache and whatever was designing back then. Get my Jordache and my Sicily jeans and my nice shirts and my new Nikes with the red stripe and the blue little bottom. You know, Nikes was brand new back then. And I was, whew. And then the rest was all party money. And I can have, you know, on a good day, make $300 shoplift, and I'll make $30, you know, good, bad day. Or it wasn't check day. Check days were good on the 1st and the 15th, because people would cuff. Cuff is, you know, I'll let you have this little girl's dress size 3T that you ordered from me 2 days ago because you've seen Julie had one, and you want one for your daughter. So it costs $80, but you get it for 20 because I give you a good price. But you don't have the money, so I got to go back on check day. So check day was, that was a good day, 15th and the 1st. And I was always in school, and I was always, you know, I hated school because I hate getting up in the morning. Now I just get up. I get up. There's alarm clocks I set just in case, but I'm always up before my alarm clock nowadays. I don't know how that happens. But back then I hated getting up for school, so I didn't like school only for that reason. Besides that, I loved school. I liked homework. I liked, you know, I couldn't remember shit, so I really hated history and geography. And now I like can't wait to learn more about history and geography. But back then I just liked to go to school, and I liked being a part of. I just didn't feel a part of. And if I smoked a little weed before class, we're good. And again, the teacher, Mrs. I don't even remember her name, but in high school, one of the teachers, she'd be like, you know, I know you're all coming here stoned. Look at your eyes. You just can't even see. They'll be like this. But, you know, we were like, oh, please. So anyways, I'm drinking and using, and then cocaine came into the picture. I know, Alcoholics Anonymous, I get it. However, I'm a dump truck. You got it. I'm taking it. I want it because it's going to get me there, wherever there is. I don't stop drinking and using drugs unless I get knocked out, unless I pass out, or unless I get locked up. That's the only time I'm stopping. And there'd be times, you know, way, you know, woo, shoot forward all the way to the crack house that I was living in, which was my house, and Shirley's house. Shirley with two E's. Me and Shirley were in the house. I'll tell you about that house in a second. But I would be sitting on the porch, and I'm all out of drugs, and the Social Security checks haven't come in yet, and now I got no money, and I don't shoplift anymore because I'm too scared. And I'd be just praying to God, God, please get me sober. I'm begging. I'm like, I don't know how to do this. I can't, you know. I'm a piece of shit, and just get me sober. But don't arrest me. Don't get me arrested. You know, I'm making bargains with God, right? Of course, the only way I stop is if I got arrested. And I got arrested quite a bit in L.A. So anyways, I'll go back to Boston for a minute. So I don't get stuck in Boston. I'll just tell you, I ended up doing a lot of cocaine. I ended up a lot of drinking. And a scene drinking in Boston is like this. It's the summertime. All the music's playing. Everybody's got their convertibles or their windows down. Because I lived right... Well, before I left the projects and I went to Brandywine. It was kind of an upper-class projects. Right? So I grew up in Maverick, and then I moved to the Heights. And now we're right across from the beach. And the beach is right... You know, here's the sand, here's the water, and then here's the airport. So Logan Airport. We've seen all the flights going in and out. And I'm like, where are those fucking people going all the time? You know, and now I can't stay out of airports. I love to fly. You'll learn about that in a minute. But it was just so fun. And then that back in the day, in the 80s, there was this thing called Matilda Bay. And it was like a little box with a wine inside the wine. The wine was in like a plastic silver cellophane, like those balloons. That's the type of material inside the box. And then they had a little thing on the side of the box. We would pop it open, pull the spout out, pop the box back in, and the spout just... So I'd walk around Shays Beach. Hey, want some wine? There you go. You know, I had my cups and my little, whatever how I carried it, but I had my box of Matilda Bay, and I had my wine cups, and I was just handing out wine to everybody at the beach, just so they could have all the time party with me, you know? And that was just a good day. The problem is, by 6 o'clock, I'm a lightweight. 3 glasses of wine, 2 Heinekens, couple of glasses. I'm drunk. I get drunk easy. Quarters, people love playing quarters to me, because I always lost. But cocaine saved the day. Because I could drink, and I could smoke, and I could sniff, drink, smoke, sniff, drink, smoke, sniff, drink, smoke, sniff. It's a little thing, right? 2 o'clock, how we did it, or I did it, and the friends that I like to party with did it. Last call, 1:30, run up to the bartender. Hey, Billy, hey, Tommy, give me about 12 pack to go. All right, it's $3 a beer. Go put them in the car, so when the bar closes, you have more beers. And, of course, you get the dealer. Hey, no, because, you know, certain cocaine dealers have ethics. Don't call me after 2 o'clock. Don't ring my bell after 12 o'clock, whatever it was. How many have, well, I know me, I don't know how many of you, but how many at 4 o'clock in the morning? Joey. One time I was at this couple's house. It was Bobo, and I can't remember his name, the boyfriend. He's like, who the fuck is that? And he said, I'm going to beat the shit. And then I heard a look at the TV. No, it's PJ. You can't do that. You can't beat a PJ. He's like, don't you ever come back. But I didn't care if I'm on it and I got to get high and I got to stay high. there's no stopping me. I have to keep going, you know? So, I'm just first I was just a thief, and then I turned into an alcoholic, and now I'm just a junkie, and this is what I'm failing, and I'm sure a lot of people are failing this, and stay away from PJ, this and that, but you know, it's just, by that time, I'm in, you know, early 20s, and like, I don't know anything else, so I just keep doing what I'm doing. I met this girl, Debbie, we ended up dating for a while. It's funny, because, you know, I would date her. I lived in East Boston, and there's a train station, and it's on the Blue Line, and that's Orient Heights. Orient Heights, Wood Island, Airport, Maverick. After Maverick, you went under the water, and then you were in downtown Boston, which is Aquarium, State Street, Government Center, Bowdoin, do the loop and come back. So, but our trains, that like unlike New York, we stopped at like 1 o'clock or something. So I would start at the Victory Pub with all my friends and girlfriends, whatever. But by midnight, I knew I had to get on the train to go to the gay bars so I wouldn't miss the last train so I could really get busy. And there is a lot more drugs and a lot more drinks. And one night I'm coming down the stairs. It's the winter and I got my long coat on. This coat, I loved it. It came down to my ankles. Guys' jackets, overcoats, usually come down to like right below the knee. This jacket, I don't know where I found it, but it came down all the way to my ankles. So it was like a big old quilt. So staying alive, doing my hair, blow drying it, right? Come down the stairs, because upstairs, downstairs, and Brandywine. My mother said, "What the fuck?" I said, "What, Ma? What?" And she just knew everything. Ooh, I couldn't fucking stand it. I said, "What?" She said, "You got your fuck jacket on. You're whoring." I said, "What are you talking about?" She said, "It's your whoring jacket. Every time you wear that thing, you don't come home for 3 days." I said, "No, sir." And in my mind, I'm like, "Really? I'm wearing this jacket more often." But I was so pissed because she always knew. She goes, "And I know where you're going, too." I said, "I'm going up to Victory Pub." What's it? She said, "You know I'm not. You're going down to the fucking bars in Boston, Jacques and whatever else there are." "No, I'm not." And she was dead right, and I couldn't stand it. And I would have to run, and I would go outside the door, and I would be so mad because, like, I was in a great mood upstairs. I just smoked a joint. I'm great. Come downstairs, and she calls every fucking card I have. I hated it, you know? Whew, I'm ready to explode. Couldn't help it. She just knows everything. You know, she was great. People loved her. She was hilarious. You know, oh, Rita? Yeah, she's the town pump. You know, she just had a name for everybody. And she was hilarious unless she was talking to you because she read you right away. And there was no denying. So, and she knew that I kind of dabble with guys in this. And she'd be like, "Hey, Mike," I always had like a best friend, always. It's, you know, groups, but as I got older, it was just like best friend for a couple of years. Get another best friend, moves on, they get a girlfriend, they stop being a friend because they don't have to get the girlfriends, and I get another best friend. She says to Mike one day, "Are you gay?" He says, "No, why?" I said, "I said, why are you hanging with my son?" I'm like, "Ma, what are you talking about?" But like, she no filter at all, you know? Wasn't easy being me. Anyways, so I'm with Debbie. When I'm not with Debbie, I'm down running downtown, or I'm working, I'm always working. I actually went to finish, well, I quit school, and I was a DJ, too. DJ PJ and Dennis the DJ, we were partners. And we did high school parties and christenings and birthdays and stuff like that. And I was just telling Ted, one day my partner Dennis calls me up and he says, "Hey, PJ, I got to borrow your records and equipment because mine is in the shop." So whatever it was, I don't remember. But I said, "Sure." I was working at the airport at the time, United Flight Kitchen. I said, "Go pick it up from my house." He picked it up from my house. I went to meet him at the party after. There was no party. Like the VFW. Yeah, meet me at the VFW in Revere. And it was like, there was nobody there. I'm like, Dennis. And no one's answering the phone. Back then, there wasn't cell phones. Went there and called him. "Oh, he's not here." And I'm like, "I don't fucking believe this. He's selling for drugs." He sold it for crack. Although all the records, this one we had milk crates, it wasn't CDs and little, anyways, hundreds, like at least six milk crates. And anyways, my mother, she found Dennis the next day. She goes, "You little motherfucker, you better get my son stuff by 6 o'clock tonight or I'm going to the..." "Oh, Dolores, no, please. Dennis, you have 6 hours. Get on it." And he brought all the equipment back. I got all the... And all this stuff I just remembered. Oh, well, Debbie reminded me that she bought me all the stereo equipment for the DJ stuff. But I didn't get half the records back, and, you know, it doesn't matter. I lost all that shit anyways. But at the time, he brought it all back because he was scared. You don't screw with Dolores. On her plate was Auntie D. Everybody knew Auntie D. And, you know, she's scared to piss out of people. She drove one of my sister's husbands over. She rode him over. She, you know, ran him right over because he did something to her. But she's nuts. Anyways, so me and Debbie, we have a son, and I'm so busy doing drugs, and, you know, now I'm still always drinking. And, you know, I got into this habit. I got three of my favorite drinks downtown in the clubs. It's a nervous breakdown. It's Chambord and Absolute on the rocks. Poof, nice. Two of them real quick, you got a good buzz. Then I liked Heineken's with limes because I'm an artist, you know, and I have to be a little bit different. More importantly, later on in life, though, I loved red wine. And I put cherries in it because I'm an artist. I got to be different. But the red wine was wonderful because I was doing so much crack. I was being so evil with the crack. I figured Jesus' blood would save me from the bad of the crack. So I loved drinking my red wine because he would save me with the red wine, right? No. Anyways, me and Debbie had a kid, Josh, and I was in no condition to be a dad. I was glad I had a kid because, you know, back in the day, I talk a lot more freely about myself nowadays, but back in the day, it's very hard to talk about anything gay-related, so I couldn't do it. So now, I don't talk about it to brag about it. I talk about it in my talks, so when I'm talking to people nowadays in the world, because maybe my story, my problems of getting through myself to be myself might help someone else that's doing the same stuff that they can't talk about, so that's why. Anyway. But, so I just knew I was never going to be married with a kid because I'm not going to get a fake marriage just to look to the world like I'm a straight guy with a nice family and just be miserable inside because I know too many people like that. So I just knew that wasn't going to happen. So I was thrilled to have a kid because got that out of the way, and that's how I think. You know, got the kid, good. That's done. But now I'm so screwed up on, I've been in and out of the nut house a few times. My mother, you know, I call, my son's been through a lot of stuff, Josh, and his mother be like, she'd call me, and I've been sober 17 years now, and she'd call me a few years, Josh is doing this, and he's going to kill. I said, call the fucking cops. I'm not calling the cops on my kid. Someone said, call the cops on my mother. She'd be like, all right, 911. Yeah, come get him. He's nuts. He's throwing all his stuff out the window. He's breaking pit. Whatever it was, she doesn't care. She's calling the cops. You know, now it's Debbie. I'm not calling the cops on my son. All right, don't. Let him die. What do you want to say? But anyways, he didn't die. So let's just, I'm just saying, everybody's so touchy. And, you know, and knowing you can't touch anybody anymore. My mother beat the piss out of all of us. You know what I mean? And curtain rods, golf clubs, you name it, she found it. And, Ma, please. One time I ran under the bed and she's shoving the broomstick under there against the wall. Like, fuck, I'm never going under the bed again. There's nowhere to go. I thought it was safe. It's just she found the pole, you know? Ugh. So anyways, I get Josh and I'm so happy, but I'm so miserable because I'm so stoned and I'm so high and I'm a friggin' junkie, and I ended up going back to high school. I forgot to tell you that. I just wanted to say that I went back to high school after DJing because the coach came in one day. We did the girls' softball team, the party. I was DJing. Come back. You only get a year left. What's up? I'll be 20 when I graduate. Who cares? Come back. I went back. I got on the swim team. I loved it. I was finally East Boston High because I went to so many different high schools. It's not funny. I was finally where everybody else went, to my own city, and it was wonderful. And I graduated, and I got, it just felt good. But then after that, I didn't know what to, and I went back to work at the frame store. I've worked in frame stores my whole life. Since I was 16, I've had jobs in between shoplifting and everything else. But I lost a lot of the jobs. One of the jobs, Kennedy Studios, it was a great place. Back when I don't know if you know any now, but Patrick Nagel was huge back then. They had all the lithographs of his stuff, and it was just beautiful. And I lived in a, you know, I come from this, you know, poor neighborhood, kind of middle class, moving up a little bit, but still, and no one knows about shit, and no one talks to me about stuff, and I can't believe that. But when I went into this framing galleries where I worked, all of a sudden I'm learning about art and culture and artists. I'm like, wow. And I'm a pretty talented guy, and I like it. And I couldn't believe it. And I'm part of it, and it's so good. And I'm really good at framing pictures, and just because I'm a technical motherfucker. I just want it perfect. Anyway, the guy said, you're the best framer we have when you show up. It's my MO. I can't show up because I'm too busy. You give me my paycheck on Friday, I could be $1.80 I'm making. Got my check at 6, get on the train, go home, shower, shave, come out. I got $20 left. Because I had to pay everybody I cuffed all week along from, you know, and I paid the bar tab, and I paid the dealer, and I paid... And it was a never-ending story. So, anyways, in and out of that house, now I'm on general relief, now I'm on Social Security, and all of a sudden I get this retroactive check from Social Security for a few thousand dollars, and my mother, I don't know how she's got away. My father was always there, but he's just like, Dolores, Jesus, suffering Mary and Joseph, could you just shut the fuck up? And she'd say, go upstairs, and she'd go upstairs, she says, go upstairs and jerk off. You know, that was her reply to him. So, you know. Oh, go pull your fucking dick. You know, that's my mother. I'm not entertaining you, I'm just telling you the truth. You know, but anyways, that's her. So he kind of just shut up because there's no talking to that one. Anyways, so somehow she talked me into putting the check in her account. Now all of a sudden my thousands of dollars that she's got control of. So I got to get out of town. I just got to leave. And again, she calls it. I said, I'm just going to California. And I've been here a couple of times on the bus, just visiting and stuff, Hollywood, whatever. I know why you're going to California. Why am I going to California? So you can live your lifestyle you want to live and do all the drugs and drink the way you want to drink. No, that's not right. I just want a different change. But she knew exactly what I wanted to do. Just wanted to go be me and party like an animal and not have to deal with anybody's shit. So I got on the train. Before I got on the train, my sister, she drove me to the train station, South Station, and it was a long four-day train ride through the whole world to get to California. But, of course, I had to go pick up $100 worth of crack for the train ride, right? So I said, oh, yeah, I owe somebody money. I don't want to owe anybody money going to California. So I got my crack, got on the train, put my suitcase above my seat on the train, went down to the caboose. The caboose is the area where you drink on the train. And I stayed in the caboose the whole time drinking, smoking my crack out the window of the bathroom. Got to Chicago, ran out of crack, got more crack, got back on the caboose, started drinking again. Got to L.A. It was Thanksgiving. Josh was born in 89, so it was 91, about a month before Thanksgiving. Here I am, L.A. Got off the train. After being up the whole time, open the newspaper, hotel, $100 a week. Ooh, Franklin and Wilcox, that's where I'll go. Well, let me tell you, back in 1991 in Franklin and Wilcox in Hollywood Boulevard, Hollywood, California, not a good place for a person that supposedly wants to be sober. I don't want to be sober, I want to get high, but tell everybody, I'm going to be sober. I was not the train 20 seconds. I finally got the hotel, I passed out, whatever I did, I came to, and it was the biggest crack smoking section, and there's liquor stores everywhere, and it was great. I had my Heinekens, I had my red wine to protect me, and I had my crack. So I'm on it. In a month, I ran out of money. You know, I got the few thousand. My mother kept shipping. She threw me 100, and it was murder getting 100. Send me 100 more from, you know, Western Union. She knew what I was doing, so it was like, pulling teeth from her to get it. But anyways, let's speed it up a little so we can get sober, huh? So, ran out of money, called Billy. He's my brother from Boston. Billy, I got to come back. I ran out of money. No, go live in Venice with Bobby. So I started, I know Bobby because I hung with Bobby's brother, Johnny. Johnny was one of those guys that we hung up on the porch. So I moved in with Bobby. Well, I didn't move in right away. What happened, I went to sleep over, but Bobby's roommate got mad because all his Boston friends kept coming to stay over. So he said, you know what, screw this, I'm out of here. So he moved out, I moved in, I got a job the next day at Fast Frame in Marina Del Rey. And on Marina Del Rey, I worked there for a month, and I started drinking and drinking and drinking every single night, and then I found out that I didn't have to go all the way to Hollywood to get the crack, because Ghost Town was right next door to where we lived, so I started going to Ghost Town. One time I came home from Ghost Town, followed by a bunch of cop cars, the helicopters, the paddy wagon, and found I had about 20 cops following me, and I thought they couldn't because I had my lights off, but, you know, you put your brakes on, the brake lights go on. Trying to be sneaky, right? Didn't work. So I had freeze helicopter, you know, and everybody's looking out the window, and like, the next day I heard the story. PJ, we've been partying here for years. You've been here a month. We've never had this scene happen ever in Venice like you. Let me tell you, the house I lived in, it was perfect. Two guys upstairs from England, Luke and his brother, two blonde big shit brick houses, firemen. Brian and Mike. Downstairs, Tina and Lita from Sweden. And then me and Bobby, the Boston Boys. It was like MTV House before MTV House became like a big thing. It was great. And we just partied and just run around and who's cooking tonight. And it's just a wonderful little thing. And that's the house it was. But that ended quick, and we all ended up moving out. And by then, I got fired from Fast Frame because I kept taking money out of Penny Cash. So then I found a job at the Frame Game, and that's where I met Shirley with two E's. And I just happened to be praying to God, God, I want to paint. God, I want to make clothes. God, I want to make jewelry, but I can't go it slow because it's just too much in my mind. I got to do it all at once. I meet Shirley. I open her garage. She has beads. She has materials. She has canvas. She has buckets and buckets of oil paint. I'm like, the lights open, and she had everything so perfectly. All the paper clips were in that baggie. All the blue oil paint was in that baggie. In 2 weeks, I had shit everywhere out of the baggies. It's like, you know, no good. But you know, and it was good. And she ended up having a lot of money. I didn't know this at the time when I met her, but we would go shopping, JCPenney, Lane Bryant's, Macy's, wherever. I'd come home, look what I got, and look what I saved. You wouldn't believe how much I saved today. And it was her money, all her credit cards, but I was the authorized user, right? She goes, I don't care how much you saved. How much did you spend? You know? I was spending thousands a day, and she bought me a truck, and I loved that truck, and I was driving down Holly, going to the Viper Room. I love the Viper Room. Going to the another night, another boy. And I'm driving. And then at the lights, this truck, right? Check this F-150. Bought it off the lot, a couple years old, but $10,000, $11,000 cash, and it was great. Never did that before. And thank you, Shirley. And I got the truck. I put lights underneath this little purple glow lights. And then the handlebars to pull yourself up, I had lights on that. And then the windshield wipers, I had lights on that. And then the back lights, I had lights in the back of the cab, lights in the back of the hood. It's just, and I would do boom, boom, and boom, boom, and people, whoa, what's that? It's like Christmas tree. But it was looked phenomenal. My friend said, because I told Brian, you know, the kid, the big Bond dude, I said, Brian, isn't put it, he says, you're nuts, you can't put all that in the truck, but I did. And he said, PG, I thought it was going to look like a Mexican Tijuana Ramrod truck. He didn't know what. He said, but outside of the way you did it, it looks phenomenal. But of course, I had to ruin it because I had to put that one extra touch too much. I got the Energizer Bunny, little bunny like this, that he pushed his hands together and his drum would light up. I super glued that socket right to the top of the hood. So with the lights and the headlights, here's my thing of the headlights. Okay. Music's playing. Na 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 na, dream boy, oh, wait. Light. Okay. Now, here's the trick. I'm at the red light, right? Mind you, I'm in the truck high so you can't see me because it's a little bit lifted. Hit my head. Down here. Come up. Hold in my breath. Get a cigarette. Put it in my mouth. Light the cigarette. Put down the window. By now my face is purple, holding the smoke from the crack so long. But I gotta make it look like, oh, I dropped something. Come up, light a cigarette. I'm just blowing out my cigarette smoke. I thought I had you all tricked. But, you know, I wasn't gonna drink in the truck. Certainly wasn't gonna smoke crack in the truck. That truck was hit so many times because I'm drinking, smoking crack, smoking weed, and taking the Klonopins. We lost the house that she lived in, the apartment. Got kicked out. Because everybody went to work every day. Me and Shirley, one time we bought these big plastic pools, you know, it's about as big as a table, little plastic pools that are that high for the little two-year-olds. Well, we put them in the back of the house where the people park because the street's here, the house is here, like two little L's that meet each other in the courtyard, but then the back is the alleyway behind, and everybody pulls in and goes into the middle and into the houses. Well, during the day, all the cars are gone, so me and Shirley just take over the parking lot. The little pools, she has her martini splashing in the water. She's 70. I'm 30-something, splashing my water, my Heineken, and my wine, running in the house every 2 or 10 minutes, getting a little hit. And we're just playing rummy or just having a hell of a time, and people come home from work about 5 in the afternoon, like, Jesus, what's going on? So they got sick of us, and they had to tell the landlord, and lunch, and we got away. I knew some friends from Westchester, lived a couple blocks away in another city, so Shirley went to Westchester. I stayed at the house because it was all, now it's about 2 feet, 2 inches of water in the house, the whole house, through all the bedrooms and the bathrooms, because it was a flood. We didn't fix it. Who cares? One day I wake up, ooh, it freezes, and the cops come, he says, you got to get out of here. And there was empty crack pipes, there was empty beer and wine, and just a shithole. He said, you know, you have so many problems right now, just get the hell out of here, because I'm not even taking you away, because you have enough to deal with. So he just kicked me out, and somehow I got away with that. Not got away with it, but like, just get out. So now I'm running around in the truck that's all banged up. The license plate's a cardboard license plate with crayons making the numbers, whatever, that I made the numbers up. I don't care what they were. And Shirley's up with my friend. And one day we're in the parking lot. I'm making a deal with this drug addict. And I said, don't do anything. The cops are there. Don't do anything. He couldn't wait. He had to do something. The cops saw what he was doing. I pulled out of the parking lot. They put on the lights. I pulled in the next parking lot over. They took the truck away. The next day, we got an apartment finally, because I was kind of living in the truck, and she was kind of staying in my house, kind of living in the truck. And now, it's just, we end up living on this place called Sawtelle Boulevard. We got an apartment finally, which was right across, around the corner from a place called Ohio Street, which is a big meeting hall in West LA that I go to a lot. So we're there. I'm going in and out of jail, and, you know, there's a crack house. It's my crack house. All the windows, they have the level of blinds like this, the windows, but I had to put two plywoods up on them because my friends that were nice and drug addicts, they would push the windows out and just climb in. So I couldn't have that anymore, so I just put up plywood. I couldn't deal with it. And that's where it ends up. And then I went away again. I had my sister Donna that moved to Vegas because she was going to move to L.A., but Melissa said there's too many earthquakes, so I'd rather you go to Vegas because there's not that many earthquakes there. She said, okay, so she moved to Vegas. She was there for a few years. I said, Donna, Shirley's getting investigated. I'm getting investigated with Shirley from the elderly abuse. Please come and get her, because when I go away and I come back, she's going to be gone. So she came and got Shirley. She took her to Vegas. I went away. I got out of jail, and I went to Venice Recovery Home in Hollywood, and I was there for a couple weeks. And Shirley came back to L.A. on the bus. When I met Shirley, she had some money. She had no money really right now. She's got a couple of checks a month. I stopped. I just spent and stopped spending. She just had a couple checks now, and some money's gone. And I met her. She had a little cane, and then she went to a walker, and now she's in a wheelchair, and she's broke, and I'm miserable, and she's looking. She was gorgeous when I met her, but, of course, she's partying with me, and now she's got a running buddy. So she's only drinking. And one time I got her smoking weed, and she said, ooh, I'm drunky wonky. I said, and she drove me to the store. She'd never smoked weed again in my life, not with me. She was stoned. But anyways, I just felt miserable what I had done to this poor lady, and I didn't care. I was a junkie asshole. I didn't care about me, but so I took her to Salvation Army and said, you gotta help me. This poor lady, she did everything for me, and now I just feel miserable about it. They found Shirley a place called the Grandview at MacArthur Park downtown where she could live. And her checks took care of her living there. And so she started staying there, and I left the recovery home, and I went back to the truck that was behind the apartment that we used to have, that we now no longer have the apartment, but the truck was still there. I stayed there for about a year. So I would sleep in the back of the super cab. I would lock it up and open the back and slide through, and because it had the little section in the back of the truck, and that's where I would sleep. So one day I went there, and the truck wasn't there. So I started sleeping on the side of the freeway on this crate, you know, with a couple of Axuans, pillow or whatever. And so one day I went to the side of the freeway to sleep on my crate, but the crate wasn't there anymore, because what had happened is on my way over there, I seen all these cop cars and fire engines and ambulances. A truck had come off the side of the freeway, flipped over. The freeway's going that way, the direction. The truck flipped over, facing that way, upside down, smack on top of the crate. So now I had no crate. And I was with this kid I met on the bus. We were going to get high, and we were in the back of the truck, but then we went to the crate. It's just so confusing because I'm out of my mind. Now I'm in the, you know, mid-30s, and I'm just a mess. And I'm saying, you don't realize we're supposed to be dead. I was like crazy. He says, shut up. Let's just drink and get high, will you? And I couldn't do anything. So the next day I went back to my little freeway spot, and I knew about the freeway spot because besides being an artsy person, I used to like doing paintings. But when I met Shirley, I did some paintings. I had a few little minor shows in Venice area, but all of it ends up being, you know, canvases get ripped and I lose storage and I don't pay bills, and it's just nothing ever really happened because I just threw it all away that God had given me. I threw it all away. But now, so before I lost the apartment, I used to splash on broken cabinet drawers I would find in the dumpster of paint I'd find next to the dumpster, and then I would bring it to the side of the freeway, and then I would try to sell these paintings. And, you know, I couldn't have a homeless sign because I wasn't homeless, and the homeless people, they didn't like that I said I was homeless because they were homeless, and they said, you can't have a homeless sign, you're not homeless. So I said, okay, I'm a starving artist. So I had a starving artist sign, right? And but now I'm really am homeless. I don't have a home anymore. The truck's gone. But I did make a little five mattress house where the crate used to be. So now I have a five mattress house. I'm higher class because I don't have a bush. I have a mattress house, five mattress house. And one day I'm sober and I said to my friend, my best friend Anthony, he's still my best friend. Now he has like 25 kids. Him and a girl, they live out at Lake Charles. He really doesn't have four kids, but I give us his balls. But I'm like, one night we're at Ohio Street and we're talking and we go have lunch over next to 7-Eleven at New Japan. It's a little restaurant with cheap money. I say, hey, you want to see my bush? He's like, what? I said, no, not that. My bush where I used to sleep. And we just laugh about that all the time when I think about the story. But anyways, so what happened is, so I'm at the five mattress house. I got a sheet over it, and because I get to peek out at night when I'm too nervous to come out. And Shirley's down at the Grand View, and you know, like I said, I was about as skinny as Ted, and I got a few teeth missing, and I look black. I'm purely a white guy, and I'm just miserable, and I'm like, fuck. And I'm out of my mind. I've been up for days, and there's only thing in the beer bottles or the wine bottles, I can't remember which it was pissed because I couldn't go out and pee anymore. I had to pee in the bottle because I was too nervous to go outside. And the crack pipes, you know, it's not a crack pipe anymore. It's a piece of little something all broken and dirty and just dead. And there's this movie across the street playing called Waking Life, and it's at the New Art Theater, one of those theaters that they still have all the neon lights and blinking. It looks great, like those old movie houses used to look. It still looks that way. And I said, wow, I wish I could wake my life up, God. And that was it. You know, it was about 4 o'clock in the morning, after all the drunks got home, before all the people started going to work. It was dead quiet, just like this. And nothing was moving along. And I'm looking out, and there's little trees moving, and I'm, hey, Jesus, can you hear me? And hear the trees moving. And so that's me. I'm listening. And I just begged my little heart out to the tree that night. Can you please, please wake my life? Please wake my life up. Bawling, not so calm like I'm saying it now, but bawling, begging. Oh, I need my life woken up. I'm dead here. I haven't seen Josh in years. My father had recently died, and I was there because I got out early, but I came back and got high right away. But my dad had just died, and I haven't seen Josh, and just fucking miserable. There's no way out because I cannot stay sober. I cannot not be high. I cannot not drink. There's no way I can do crack for an hour. I have to be high. I have to. Because I'm stuck. Stuck on stupid. Please, God, something, let something happen. So, the next day I bummed up some money and I went and saw the movie Waking Life. I come out of the movie theater and the kids all, what's going on, something? I said, I got no money. He said, I seen you making money all morning long. I said, I went to the movie. He didn't see no. Pulled out my ticket stub. Look, here's my stuff. You went to the movie? He's shocked. I don't remember what it was. It was a cartoon, some trippy head cartoon, Waking Life, but I was just so proud that I actually, you know how long it was, Ben, since I spent money on anything besides alcohol, crack, Lay's chips with a little dip pack to cost $1.99, came with the dip inside the same package, or a Mountain Dew. That's all I spent my money on, and cigarettes. Alcohol, crack cocaine, Mountain Dew, chips with the dip connected. That's all I spent my money on, and cigarettes. I just went and saw a movie. It killed me to spend that money on the movie, too, because I knew that I wanted to be high, too, but I went and saw the movie. So I went to court, because, of course, I got arrested and I had to go to court. And they said, you're going to go to prison for 3 years. Or you can do this thing called Prop 36 that we have into this drug counseling thing. Immediately, drug program. Because I'm scared of my own shadow. I ain't trying to go to prison. I've been to jail a bunch of times, but they say prison's easier than jail, but I don't know. I don't want to find out. I don't want to go to prison. So I started going to this drug program, and it started out in West Los Angeles on Pico and Robertson. It was called JFS, Jewish Family Services. In about a week, they ran out of money, so we had to go to BHS on Highlands and Sunset, Behavioral Health Services. I just remember the names. So I started going there, and I went to visit Shirley 3 or 4 days after I started going to the program, and I haven't done any drugs or alcohol for 4 days, and I haven't been sober breath for years. Never mind 4 days. How the hell did this happen? So I'm going to visit Shirley, and the lady Barbara who ran the place, she's great at the time, but not a little bit shady, we'll say. She let me stay with Shirley immediately. She said, "Now that you're sober, you love Shirley." And this, they had alcoholics, people that weren't senior citizens, just a shithole of a nursing home type place. But Shirley loved it because she could drink all the pop-off vodka that I brought her home after the meeting she wanted. And Barbara let me live with Shirley immediately for free because she knew I was going to meetings. So one of the days I'm leaving to go to drug counseling, I'm walking by from the Grandview onto the bus to get to the place. She says, "Hey, yo, what do I need?" I'm like, "Dude." You know, one of my Mexican deals. "Dude, you cannot ask me what I need anymore." Because I was buying 2-3 times a day of these guys on the bus down there. But I would always end up, that was downtown where you got it, but I would always end up going back to West LA. Even though my truck wasn't there anymore, my little 5-mattress house was. It's just my junkie people and alcoholics that I knew. That was my area. But I'd go downtown to get it. So anyways, he knew me and he's like, "What do you need?" I said, "Do me a favor. Please do not ask me what I need anymore." I said, "I'm trying to be sober. I got about 4 days sober, 5 days, whatever I said. It was less than 2 weeks sober." And I said, "I'm never, ever going to be able to say no to you if you keep on asking me what I need. I can't do it. I love it too much. I've got a few days sober. Please don't ask me anymore what I need because I know that I'm not going to be able to say no all the time." "Oh, man, that's awesome." Shook my hand. "Good for you. This shit sucks." Oh, I hated him so much. He knew it sucked, but if I wanted it, he'd give it to me, but he knew it was terrible. So I hated him for that. But he never, ever asked me again what I needed. So after about 2 weeks of being in the second place, BHS, doing the drug counseling, I just heard shit right away. I heard, "Don't sit in the back all punk like this. I'm not doing that right in assignments. Fuck you, I ain't doing that. You and the piss in the cup, shove it up your ass." You know, he said, "Don't do that." He said, "You don't have to come back here again."
What?
"You do not have to come back here again."
Wow.
"I don't have to do this over. I've been doing this over and over and over for my whole life. You do not have to come back here and do this program again."
Wow. "I don't? How does that happen?"
Move up closer to the front. Uncross your angry hands. Listen to what I tell you. If there's an assignment, do the assignment. Show up on time and complete the work. And you don't have to come back and do this again. No fucking way. It's that easy? Uh-huh.
Wow.
How the hell I heard him say that, I don't know. But I heard him say that. Till he dropped the bomb. "You also got to go to 12-step meetings." "What?"
"I got things to do. I have nothing to
to do. I get things to do. I'm here for 3 hours a day. Now you want me to go to meetings at night too? Damn it. I had nothing to do. So I would go to my counseling, go back to the Granville, have a little dinner with the elderly people, then get back on the bus and go to Ohio Street. But before I went to Ohio Street, of course, I would stop at the side of the freeway doing a little panhandling thing. So one night I went to the meeting at the Men's Tag, and Bill Sola says to me, PJ, did I just see you on the side of the freeway? I'm like, yeah, just making a couple bucks. Fuck me, you can't do that anymore, dude. What do you mean? We work around here. We support ourselves. We don't take other people's money. Fuck. I can't do this anymore? No. Oh, my God. Do you know how hard it was? Because now, I ended up being in the Pacific group, was my home group, and I didn't know this. Just went to a meeting, and the next meeting I went somewhere else, and the next meeting I went somewhere else, and the next meeting I went somewhere else. And all week after week, I just realized it's a Pacific group, and oh, don't go there, they mean, I didn't know anything different. I just knew, show up on time, clean up, do your commitment, shut up, leave your phone away, if you got a commitment at the door, wear a suit, and that's it. All right. And I didn't know it was so mean and not nice. And now, today, I realize it's the Harvard of all Alcoholics Anonymous. And people don't like us because we're taught well. I'm just playing. This is a great group. And if you're part of it, it is. And if you're not part of it, you hate it, I don't care. It's working for me. That's all I know. Anyway, we turned it up. Ended up, I met Anthony, and he was my best friend. Big strapping 6 foot something dude and handsome bastard. And of course, I want to be his friend. He's my handsome friend. And we just clicked. And we just clicked. And we were everywhere together. And we would sit in front of Ohio Street on the ground, right in front of the doors with our back against the doors, like we owned the place, sitting like this, just loving life. And we would bring the big book. And we would just read the stories in the back. Hey, let's see what today. Oh, today we'll do. Got a bravado. Oh, tomorrow, window of opportunity. We would just read the stories. It was wonderful. And as we're reading, Swirl, I'd get sidetracked because I'd see all the traffic on the 405 going by slowly. Look at all that money I'm missing. But I'll tell you what. I told you what I looked like when I was new. Train wreck, right? But people saw me at the meetings every single day, showing up early, sitting in front of the doors waiting to be opened. People saw me doing the commitments. Commitments! Oh, that was fun. Someone didn't, you know, I'm always the chair stacker or the cigarette butt sweeper rupper. But one time the cookie person didn't show up. I don't do cookies. I design dessert platters. So, of course, my first night, you know, my preview of what's going to come. Who did the cookies? That's right. I did the cookies. Good. You're the new kitchen crew chief. Damn it. But I just loved it because it's, you got to admit, Alcoholics Anonymous is the most nerdy, stupid, friggin' thing you'd ever want to end up doing in your life. Bunch of fucking losers. However, if you end up doing everything that everybody else is doing, how can it be a bunch of nerdy losers? It's the winners. You're a part of that perfect, phenomenal monstrosity of goodness that's turning your shit smoking, drinking, snorting, shooting, fucking miserable, losing life around. And now, instead of letting the loser do its job on you, you get to give the winner a chance. You get to give the winner a chance. I've been sober 17 years. How the fuck did that happen? I gotta tell you. So I did the program, and after about 6 months, I had to go back to court for a progress report. And you know, I don't know if you've been locked up, but if you have been locked up, you know that if you go with Jimmy, Joe, and Jim, whoever, on that, and then there's a 30-day review of everybody, the next 30 days, those same guys are going back, unless they screwed up the parole or the probation. Oh, one less. By the end of the 6 months, I was the only one left of everybody that kept on going back every month. And the judge just looked at me, and now I'm in a suit and tie because I learned a lot of stuff in the group. Dress up when you go into court. Don't wear shirts. You're not going to fucking beach. Just dress up like you're going to court. You're going to an interview, dress up like you're going to an interview. You're going to go on a date, maybe show up on time and ask them what they would like to do and stop trying to be the boss of everything. And I just learned how to grow. And what? I haven't talked to my son. He hates me. I write a letter once a month, and then it's going to be twice a month, and then it's going to be phone calls. And oh, this is a lot of friggin' work, life. Oh, my God, is life a lot of work or what? Right? But it feels so good when you actually get to do a little bit of life. Since I've been sober, my mother died, my father died, my sister died, my other sister died, Shirley died. Everybody's freaking dying. I'm not going to say you get sober, they're going to die on you. But check this out. If you're sober and people die, you get to go to the funeral. You get to feel the fucking pain that hurts so much of someone that you love had died. But you get to feel it, and it feels so miserable. And all of a sudden, it feels so good that you got to be there, and you get to remember the love and the fun and the great things that you've got to enjoy with that human being on this world. And then all of a sudden you get the stupidest, shit-eatingest grin on your face because guess what? Because you were sober, you got to be at that funeral and experience that. And all the people that were there that loved that person too. Because I'll tell you what, on the side of the freeway, I got no cell phone. There weren't even cell phones back then, really. But how am I going to know someone died on the side of a freeway? No one's going to know where to find me. I'm too stoned or stupid or drunk to care. But now that I'm sober and I get to do that, I get to make rosary beads and put them in the caskets of my loved ones. I get to hug everybody that came to say goodbye to my mom and my dad and my other two sisters. You know, the sister Donna that got Shirley from Vegas, brought her back to Vegas and let her live for a while. The one that told me one day after she seen me scraping my crack pipe at her house and drinking and pissing myself that I'm never going to get sober, I'm a loser, and I can't believe what a junkie you turned into. She's dead because she OD'd in the car one day when she finally moved back to Boston, but I'm still sober. I stayed sober through getting Shirley. After waiting 2 years, because I had no power of attorney or anything, I had to wait 2 years to get her ashes, and I got to get her ashes, and I get to sprinkle them over through the Van Nuys Airport where her husband, that was a Flying Tigers pilot, happened to be buried or sprinkled himself, and that's where she wanted to be, and that's what she asked me to do, and I got to keep my word. You get to keep your word today. You're not too shitty drunk at the bar and oops, there goes another meeting I missed in the morning for work. You get to pick your son up after school because you're not busy doing meth with your friends. You get to be a part of life. You get to pay your bills that you can't stand paying, but you guess what? You get to pay them. And you know what else? You get to go to work. You don't have to go to work. So you don't have to do a freaking thing. I get to go to work. I get to be on time. I get to pay a bill today. I made the bills myself. I'm working on my credit, but, you know, I get to do it. I get to play adult. I feel like we're all kind of little kids in grown-up bodies. We're all just trying to get along on the play box and the sandbox and just, you know, hey, can I play with your truck too? And, hey, can we make a little flower arrangement over there? Whatever we want to do with our life, we can do it now because we've got time and the heart. Oh my God, your heart. I am so aware of what I feel today. I love so much what I love. I love a good movie. I love seeing my son happy about stuff. I hate seeing him get mad at shit he doesn't like. But I feel so much. And I give a shit. Do you know how it is good to give a shit? Oh, it's wonderful. And my first years, I got to wrap it up. And in my first few years of sobriety in my home group, after what I was saying about the courthouse, I went back, no one was left. It was only me and the judge said, I don't believe you made it. With your track record, there was no way you can make it. And the public defender says, I can't believe it either, but you did a good job. Your probation is dismissed. Can I get a picture because you look good in your suit? I said, sure, take one for me too because I'm usually in a jumpsuit. I never look this good in court. So after that day, it was about 6 months into sobriety, boom! I could go smoke crack and not be in trouble. I could go drink and not be in trouble. Slap on the wrist because I just did my time and it starts all over again. Or I could keep doing this. Because this ain't too bad, these people in PG. Even though I suck at softball, it's kind of fun going to the yard every Saturday. Dealing with Clancy shit. Literally. I can go to Mountain High and I can sing on songs and I always said there's a thing we can do every year at Mountain High, and I design clothes, you know, I've had fashion shows, I've sung songs, I did raps, I just love entertaining and having a good time on stage, and Mountain High gave me that opportunity. I've been to Joshua Tree millions of times with trips. But I still do meetings and H&I. I was an H&I big book dumper for a while, and the GSR, and I just got involved. Remember, I told you, if I get involved and I'm doing everything you're doing, we're a bunch of winners. If I look at you and I'm not doing anything, and you're all doing it, you're losers because you're doing all the weird shit. But if you're doing it, you're doing all the weird shit, and you know it's to save your life and to be a winner, so it's not weird anymore. It's just great stuff to do to save your life. I don't want to be on the side of the freeway ever again. I don't even know how I got there. Now I look at people on the side of the freeway and I'm like, what the hell is wrong with you? But it happened. Since I've been sober, I've been all over the world, kind of. Italy, France, Germany, Switzerland, Austria, Iceland. I'm an artist. I run a doctor's office from 7 to 12. I run 3 sober livings. If you need a sober living in the LA area, look me up in West LA somehow. Find it through Bill. I'm an artist. I love to paint my ass off. And now my paintings end up on gallery walls and stores and restaurants and hotels. And it's not in the dumpster ripped because I didn't take care of what I was doing. I actually finish my paintings. I make appointments. I go to places around the world and I pound the pavement. Can I have an art show? Can I run? Oh, I can? Okay, 1 month, May, I'll be there. Make my arrangements on the plane, make my reservations, I'm there, I put it up, I take it down, I sell a few things, move on to the next place. My son comes back and forth all the time, I go back and forth all the time. The family members that are still alive, I get to see them, they get to love me, and it's not always perfect, and it's not always easy, and it's a lot of friggin' work. But it's worth it. For the little part of the day, every day, when you're sober, there's a part, you sit back and like the two guys I seen you sitting on the wall just talking whatever you were talking about at that 10-minute break, looking at the beautiful mountain across the way. What's better than that? What's better than... Thanks, God, this is a nice day. I like this. You know? Give the winner a chance. Thanks. Thank you.